There is always hope. I read a story about a minister. It's not about me, so just so we know. But it's a story about a minister who had become quite ill. And his illness kept him away from his duties, which included preaching and doing other things, and also kept him away from his monthly board meeting. The morning after the board meeting, the chairperson called the pastor to bring him up to speed on things that happened at the meeting and to ask how he was faring. And suddenly the chairperson said, "Oh, I almost forgot to tell you that the board had a vote to decide if we should pray for you to get better. The vote passed 5-4. Surely one of the experiences that all human beings face is being sick. Whether it's the flu or the cold or something more serious, we can all conclude that sickness of any kind is the great interrupter of life. Sickness enters our lives without knocking. It thwarts all our plans. It mocks the idea of certainty. And if the sickness is serious enough, it actually can diminish our hope for the future. It comes like a burglar into our house. It touches every part of our lives. And sickness in one person influences the lives of everyone else, in the home, in our places of work, and yes, even in the church. Whenever we are ill, we will do just about anything to feel better. If you go into any pharmacy in the winter months, you can tell that there's a cold virus going around our town just by how depleted the shelves are of cold and flu remedies. When you're feeling ill, you lose interest in everything else in life to find ways to ease our pain and discomfort. When the illness is life-threatening or life-altering, it then becomes the central focus of our lives, doesn't it? Everything in our lives takes a back seat to feeling better or being cured. Such an interruption by illness occurred to a woman who lived in Jesus' time. As I mentioned, it's portrayed incredibly beautifully in the Chosen series, if you ever want to see it. It's a story of a woman who encounters Jesus in Mark 5. The incident takes place on a city street. And in those days, the city streets were quite narrow and they twisted around among the buildings. And the crowd of people pressed in on Jesus. It's kind of like the mall at Christmas time. Except the people in this case weren't shopping. They were going right by all the people selling goods. And there was a lot of noise and confusion in this crowd. As I said, the crowd was not there to purchase anything or to get their provisions for the house. They were there for one purpose and one purpose only, to get a glimpse of the one named Jesus, to see what he might do next. Jesus kind of portrayed as walking like a king up that street. He's wading through this mob. The common people speak of Jesus with deep affection. The beggars, you can picture them whispering his name softly at the fringes. The children, perhaps, have started to sing songs about him. Yet most important for today's scripture lesson is that Jesus is known to the diseased people of the community. Jesus has been known to be healing people who were pretty ill, some of whom were so sick that they were bedridden or devastated by some kind of disease or infirmity. His fame has trickled down the streets to the forgotten men and women of that community. Who is this renowned healer, they want to know? Why, he's Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus' journey through the crowd began with the request of a man named Jairus. Jairus was the ruler of the synagogue. Now, I should point out that the ruler of the synagogue is not a rabbi. That's really important. But rather, the ruler of the synagogue was more like an administrator, kind of like the Pam of our church. You know,
that's right.
Well, Jairus had a daughter, a young daughter, who was dying of something. We don't know. She was very ill. And he was on a mission of restoration for the girl that he loved dearly. And the crowd following him wanted to see Jesus go with Jairus and do this amazing miracle. They were looking for a show. You see, even though Jesus did wonderful things, opinion was still divided about him. There was lots of arguments and discussion. Some were declaring that he could do those kind of things, those healings, and others were still doubtful. As Jesus is making his way with the crowd, it slowed, of course, because of the crowd, his walk is interrupted by a very sick woman, very sick. Her face, you can picture it, was marred with lines of agony. Her body was probably racked with pain. Who is this woman? Tradition gives her all kinds of various names. I think they call her Veronica in the series of The Chosen, but I can't tell you her name. I don't know. And really, it doesn't matter so much. It was enough that we picture this woman in great pain and great discomfort. She is typical of countless others who are facing endless pain and suffering throughout the history of humankind. For 12 years, this poor woman has suffered. 12 years. 12 years is a very long time. And what does this unnamed woman want from Jesus? Well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? She wants relief. She wants restoration. She wants health. She wants life. She hopes Jesus can heal her as she's heard that he's healed so many others. She had every reason to want to be healed. Her sickness, like any sickness, had had a profound effect upon her. She felt the losses caused by her illness every single day that she drew breath. In sickness, as in any battle, there are losses, even for the victor. The pain and the uncertainty of the illness usually amplify the sense of loss experienced by that victim. What are some of the things that she might have felt or experienced? Well, a loss of control. Any of us who have been sick know that. Suddenly the body, rather than obeying you, has kind of taken on its own agenda. It behaves in any way it darn well pleases. It's like driving a car on an icy highway. Suddenly your car hits an ice slick and you're out of control. You hit the brakes, you twist the steering wheel, and nothing helps. All you can do is just hang on and wait for the crash. It's been sickening. It's a helpless feeling. This was the embarrassing condition of this woman. She had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. Because of her condition, she also lost a sense of identity. I don't know if you've noticed this, but sick people are often become defined by their illness. Have you noticed this? Isn't it interesting that the lady in the story isn't given a name? She's simply called the woman who had been subject to bleeding. That's how they refer to her. That's the same thing happens today. We speak of people like, oh, she's got cancer. Or he has AIDS. Or she suffers from manic depression. Sick people lose their identity when they are ill. One is no longer the person that they once were. They are the person who has an illness, who is disfigured, who endures chronic pain, the one who is dying. She also would have experienced a loss of certainty in her life. With a chronic illness, everything becomes contingent, on that condition. Vacations are put aside. You can't go on a vacation like this. You can't go to work because you're ill. Even getting up in the morning is stipulated by the sickness. Can I do it? Can I get up? What was once predictable is now provisional. She also would have lost a place in society. This is maybe the hardest part for her to cope with. When she was sick, the losses go beyond just the physical. Sickness often puts a strain on relationships, on jobs, on hobbies, on families. The sick person feels a better fit in a hospital with other sick people than in a healthy world. They don't fit in a healthy world. This was certainly the case for this poor woman declared ritually unclean by the religious authorities. She couldn't socialize. She couldn't go to the synagogue. She probably couldn't get married or didn't get married. Or any of the other things that give life meaning, she would have had to forego. Then there's the whole thing about the loss of resources when you're ill. The woman in the story, it said she spent all she had. She was financially bankrupt. She was emotionally spent. She was physically weak. She reminds us that vast fortunes of time, energy, and money can be squandered on trying to get healthy. And finally, maybe the hardest thing to cope with of all, she would have experienced the loss of hope. Perhaps the most chilling aspect of this lady's life is that she had tried everything. And yet, instead of getting better, scriptures say that she got worse. She was beyond human help and she was beyond human hope. She was at her wit's end. As a last resort, and we need to see it that way, she comes to Jesus hoping against hope that he could heal her. She was desperate enough to try anything. And sickness makes us do some strange things, doesn't it? Pain can make us desperate. Not satisfied with conventional treatment, the sick may seek alternative treatments unendorsed by traditional medicine. And some alternatives may prove valid, some even miraculous, but others flirt with quackery. But at least there's something to do, something to try. This woman in the story was desperate. She was willing to try anything to bring healing to her battered body. She heard about Jesus. Maybe a rumor. Maybe some news she picked up somewhere. Jesus was a healer. And strangely, something begins to stir in her heart. A resolution begins to build in her mind. I must find him. I must go to him. He can heal me, she began to believe. Her resolution now emerges as faith. So she came up from behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. It is really that she touched just the fringe or the prayer fringe that was hanging off the cloak. Like a frightened, whipped little puppy edging towards a bone. She wishes to steal a blessing and remain anonymous. All she wants to do is touch his garment and depart. So she thinks to herself, if I can just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Can you imagine the nervous reasoning going on in her mind? Touch him, yes, just to touch him. There would be no harm in that. On the head, no. Can't touch him there, that'd be irreverent. On the hand, no, that's too familiar. But there can't be any harm in touching his robe just as he passes by. That would be enough, she tells herself. just touch the hem of his robe. If I just touch him, I can get some of that power that he possesses. If. You ever stop for a moment to consider the magnitude of that little conjunction, if? That's the issue for us, isn't it? This woman believes in Jesus' power. She knows in her heart that Jesus can pull off a healing, or at least she's desperate enough to give it a try. So, again, picture it. She squeezes through the crowd. Despite the cultural prohibitions against brushing up against other people, she's desperate, remember? She reaches out her hand as far perhaps as she can reach, and she touches his garment, and she slinks back into the crowd to disappear. It's a daring move. She in one moment displays both faith and fear. And while others bump into Jesus, she reaches out and touches him. That's a significant difference in the story that we often miss. That's what's being described here. The crowd is, there's incidental bumping among the people. That was expected. We all know what that's like. We get into a crowd and we bump into people accidentally, incidentally. But this woman's contact was not incidental. She was driven by faith. She was driven by intent. She made a deliberate effort to touch his garment. What does that tell us? When we are so desperate and so dead that we know we have nothing left to lose, we can risk being brave and reach out to Jesus. As instantaneously as the woman touches Jesus, he sensed the healing power had gone out of him. No one else noticed her. No one. Only Jesus knew she was there. He stops and he turns around and he tries to see who touched him and who had just been healed and why. He asked, who touched my clothes? How ridiculous is that? He looks for her, but he doesn't see her anywhere. Once again, as in the initial healing, he comes forward, she comes forward on her own. She's brave, isn't she? And presents herself to Jesus. And Jesus says, oh, these are beautiful words, folks. Daughter, your faith has healed you. Daughter, go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Jesus calls her daughter. She had been a daughter of death. Now she's a daughter of life. In an instant, her body regains control. She's granted a new identity. She now has a certain future. She regains her place in society. She is restored to wholeness, and she discovers hope. In an instant, Jesus heals her sickness. He eases her suffering. He grants her freedom. He saves her soul. That's the record. These are the facts of the story. It's a matter of history. That is the miracle. Jesus heals a woman who had a bleeding problem. And what a miracle it was. The only miracle recorded in Scripture where no word is spoken or action displayed by Jesus until after the healing. Is there another miracle lurking here? Notice where the woman met Jesus. She didn't go to the synagogue, did she? Didn't go to a house. Where did she meet Jesus? Meets him on the street. She didn't have a private audience with Jesus. She's in the midst of this great crowd pressing in on Jesus. She touched him in faith, in desperate believing faith, and he stopped. That is the miracle I don't want any of us to miss today. The touch of an anonymous woman in the crowd halted the Lord of glory. That is the glorious message of this miracle. She touched him. And so can we. The other miracle is that the human touch has the power to arrest God, to stop him. Yes, to stop him, to halt him, to make him aware of your problems, your petitions. Boy, we need to touch him. Most of us are like that crowd. We're thronging Jesus. We're just following him around. We're bumping into each other and maybe him occasionally. But we never intentionally touch him. A great many people in the church, and perhaps a great many outside the church, are thronging Jesus but not actually touching him, but not being found. Seeking him but not being found by him. Coming close to him but not actually encountering him. Coming close to Jesus is not enough. It's kind of like missing a train. You may miss it by 1 minute, and that's close, but you still missed it. It's gone. You're left behind. Thronging, following the crowd, it doesn't save anybody. Coming near to Jesus will not bring a healing. We must touch him for ourselves. So you ask, how do I touch Christ? It is one thing for that woman a long time ago on that street, but how in the world do I touch him now? Let me suggest a few ways you can do that. First of all, give God a chance. Take your problem, whatever it may be, take it to him in prayer. Tell him about it, just as if he did not know already. Hold nothing back. Dare to be honest with God. Secondly, believe that God will hear you. Remember that he heard the poor woman who only touched the hem of his garment. Believe with all your faith that he cares what happens to you. You've got to believe that. You can't doubt how much he loves you when he went to the cross at Calvary. Be willing to wait patiently for God, for the Lord. Because, believe it or not, he doesn't answer every prayer on Sunday afternoon. You might have to wait till Friday. But wait. God's in no hurry with you. The person who waits on God doesn't lose anything. You can also recognize when he's in your presence. When he's drawing a crowd or working a miracle, that's the time to reach out and touch him. It is one thing to throng to Jesus, but it's quite another thing to trust him. There's lots of people in the world who bump into Jesus, but very few of them reach out and touch him in faith when he passes by. And finally, when he speaks to you, do what he tells you. He may not tell you audibly. You may not hear his voice specifically. You will not see writing in the sky, but generally through your own conscience and through your own trusted counsel of friends, he will indicate to you the correct course of action in your life. When he lets you know what you must do, do it. The message of this miracle is that one woman, it was at the very end of her rope, had the courage to step out of normal procedures to find healing and hope. She touched the Lord of the universe, and he stopped for her. And he'll stop for you too. Don't miss that miracle. Amen.